Underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester, Vermont, and Saratoga, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a master's degree in English with a concentration in literature studies and an MFA in creative writing. strose.edu/gradprograms.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Frankie Bailey is an associate professor of criminal justice. She is the author of mysteries, as well as nonfiction titles that explore the intersections of crime, history, and popular culture. In her new novel, What the Fly Saw, she looks at the real world of police work and criminal law and speculates on how they might change in the near future. It is a great pleasure to welcome Frankie Bailey to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. An honor to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me here. Just an update to my bio. I am now a professor. I was promoted.
You got the full gig.
Yes.
Excellent. So congratulations.
Thank you.
On that. When it comes to that role as a professor and dealing in this world of criminal justice, it seems that so many times when I talk to crime writers, they are often journalists. They are often novelists who turn to an interest in crime or going through the scientific. To have your background, to me, seems a bit rare.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know too many. I know at least one other criminologist who writes, but I guess because most of the time we're so focused, if we're in an academic setting, on writing, doing academic writing and research, and because often when we take to writing, it's writing about true crime as opposed to fiction.
Yeah. So that idea of writing fiction came to you when?
Long, long time ago, when I was a teenager, I knew I wanted to be a writer at some point in my life, and actually sent away for a correspondence course, the famous writer's school correspondence course. The salesperson turned up at the door, and my parents actually enrolled me in the course. And then I went off to Virginia Tech, and I majored in psychology and English. So I've really come full circle.
And obviously the psychology helps in the criminal justice part, the English helps in the writing part, although they both help each other too, don't they?
Yeah, and my specialty in criminal justice is actually crime history and crime in mass media popular culture. And so my first book was actually a nonfiction book about Black characters in crime and detective fiction. And that was how I got back into writing again.
So in these novels, which we'll talk about in more detail in just a moment, in these mystery novels, you imagine a world that is about 5 years in the future. And I will ask you about that in a moment, but before I do, I would think that with an interest in history that you would want to go backwards and say, okay, well, let's set these at a time where I know what happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a two-part answer. My first series actually features a crime historian. When I started that series, I wanted to create someone who could use my research. You know, so I have in that series a real-life true crime from the past and a crime from the present. And I've been doing that. And then I came to write the series because I've been talking to an editor, Marcia Markland, my editor at St. Martin's now, and she said, what are you working on? And I said, I'm working on a 1939 historical thriller, which I'm still working on. And she said, I'm really looking for something, he said, in a city in the present. And so on my way home on a train, I thought, well, that was really silly. I was talking to this New York City editor. Why didn't I come up with something better? And I came up with three ideas and just shot them out to her. And the last one was a near future police procedural set in Op. And in part, it was because I've been watching a Sean Connery movie on television, Outland, and I've been thinking about, yeah, this would be really cool. And so it's more chance than careful thought, just an impulsive kind of, that would be fun to do kind of thing.
Once you have that idea, is the discussion of how far do I want to put this out into the future?
Yeah, because I knew, even as I was shooting the idea out to her, that I really didn't want to go far enough into the future where I would be writing sci-fi. I like sci-fi movies. I've read some sci-fi here and there, but I don't feel qualified to write sci-fi. I'm not that into, you know, the universe creating, the world creating, even though I needed to do world building with this. But I ended up, I wanted to go near into the near future so that I could deal with social issues where we're right now about to reach the tipping point. And so I'm dealing with things like climate change and epidemics and water main breaks, you know, those kinds of things that in 5 years, you know, are going to be even more pressing. And the odd thing is that with near future, the present keeps catching up with your future. And so even as I was writing the first book, I started out in September because I wanted it to be really hot in September, and it was really hot in the real world in September, and so I had to move into late October. And so, you know, things that the present is always catching up with me, and that's why, you know, I had to think about how to make my near future different, to have a twist.
Do things change a lot in 5 years?
Well, you know, because I have a kind of alternate universe, a parallel universe, there are things that we will probably not have in 5 years. For example, robots who can perform and interact with people as housekeepers. So there's a scene in the book where my detectives go to visit a billionaire and his robotic maid answers the door and interacts with them. And so, you know, those kinds of things,
right.
Probably it's going to be a bit further along. But there are other things. I joined a Rural Future Society, this group of, you know, scholars and others who think about the future. I read books about what might be happening in 2020. And so a lot of the things that I do incorporate are things that are in the works and not widely available now, but will be very soon.
And when you think about criminal justice and your field of study, of what we know about what happened 5 years ago or 10 years ago and how things have changed, that can help formulate how the world looks, I assume, in 2020 when it comes to fighting crime.
Mm-hmm. One of the issues is going to be surveillance. I mean, right now we're dealing with pervasive surveillance. So if you're driving down the street, as you know, multiple cameras are probably catching you as you're passing
right.
by, and that's been true for a while. And so one of the things I want to look at in a series is what happens when Albany, my Albany, has a surveillance system that's watching the city 24 hours a day. But then the other problem with surveillance systems is that you have to keep them up and working. And so if you have an old infrastructure, if you're dealing with solar flares and solar storms and other things, blizzards, that can knock your system out, how do you, you know, that's one of the ways that crime can still happen in a system where surveillance is pervasive. But there are also other issues like privacy. And this is one I've really been thinking a lot about. What happens when you have a surveillance system and you are being watched by cameras? On the one hand, it's very good for law enforcement, but then you could become the person who's being watched.
Right.
And what happens then?
And the idea of this new novel, just from the title alone, you get this, of what the fly saw, of being that fly on the wall, of being that thing that allows you to see what's going on.
Right. And actually, that was inspired in part by the ballot that was the inspiration for the book, you know, Who Killed Cock Robin? But then as I began to think about it, as you said, it's the fly on the wall in a number of ways in this book, including that surveillance system.
When you think about the future, it obviously has you also thinking about what won't change. And
yeah.
There are some universals. There are some things that we have seen as part of our law enforcement system for decades, if not centuries, and we will see those in 5 years as well. Some of that is good, some of that is bad, I assume.
And that's one of the reasons I wanted to deal with a female police officer or a biracial female police officer in a police organization. Historically, and still to some extent, police departments have been white male dominated. So I'm putting this police officer, this biracial police officer, young woman in this setting, and, you know, what is it like for her in this, you know, 5 years from now in this setting, this police department?
Enter Hannah McCabe and her partner, Mike Baxter. Well, hopefully without giving too much away, you would hope great strides had been made, but she still has to fight many of the, if not all of the things that women would have to fight today.
Yeah, I didn't really think. You know, I gave it a lot of thought. I thought, well, 2019, 2020. I mean, this is something that female officers have been dealing with for a long time. They come into police departments in the early 20th century as police matrons who are dealing with women and children and social issues and communities. And then only very gradually are they made police officers. It's the 1960s and 70s, you know, with Title VII, that they finally become patrol officers out on the street. And then the basic question is, can they do the job? Are they going to be able to do the job? And for Black female police officers, they're dealing with the fact that they're not white and they're not white women. So it's the kind of double marginality that we talk about in social science.
Frankie Bailey is our guest on the book show this week. The name of the new book is What the Fly Saw, a mystery from the author of The Red Queen Dies. I assume when you completed that book that you knew that you wanted to do another one?
Yes.
A series was in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And to have this character go in real time?
That's really interesting. I've been thinking about time because in my other series, I started out, the first book is published in 2000. It's now 2015, and I'm five books into the series, and in series time, only 2 years has passed.
Yeah.
So I started out writing in the present. That series is now in 2004, in the past. This series, I'm starting in 2019, now I'm in 2020. Mm-hmm. I could go on for five or six more books, and real time would catch up with my series time, and I would be writing in the present. So it's kind of one of my near future series would then be in the present, because series time passes much more slowly. So in the second book, I'm only 3 months from the time of the first book.
That's fascinating. And I guess while we're talking about the future, publishing probably won't change that much, that it's, you know, it's about a book a year, right?
Yeah, publishing has been changing so quickly because of technology, but it's still, that's the basic idea that if you're writing a series, you want books to come out often enough so people don't forget about your series.
Tell us a little bit, you touched on this, of course, about Hannah McCabe and her age and her racial profile and makeup, but talk a little bit about her as a person and what makes her a good cop.
Well, there's, and I'm not giving away too much because it happens early in the book. Readers find out that when she was 9 years old, someone broke into her family's home, and she ended up shooting this burglar and killing him. And her brother was injured in that accident, and he's now, that crime, I should say, and he's now in a wheelchair. And so she's been living all her life with this incident that happened. And so when I think about why she became a cop, I started with that idea, you know, why would this woman become a cop? You know, she has a degree in criminal justice and psychology. Mm-hmm. Why not something else? And I thought there must have been something in her past. And that was the thing I locked on. And it defines in many ways the family dynamics. Her mother is dead. She was a famous poet. Her father is a retired journalist and editor. The father, white, the mother, black. She and her brother, of course, biracial. And there is this whole, I'm really interested in family relationships. And so she knows that her brother was her mother's favorite child, but she's her father's favorite child. So those family dynamics that play out in various ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I think about, you know, why she's a good cop, she's a good cop because she comes from this family where she's been taught to think about things, to talk about things. But she brings to the job this dedication, this passion for justice that grows out of the fact that when she was 9 years old, she killed someone. And so to work through this fact that I took this life, she has to think about what was this about and not just, I mean, who is this person I kill? You know, he has a backstory himself, and she shares that at one point. You know, this kid who had a really tough life, and she ended up killing this kid, and what does it all mean? And so she cares about the people that she's working with, that she's providing services to. But at the same time, because she's a cop, one of the things she's trained to do, particularly as a homicide cop, is to step back and look at this. You know, it's my job. I have to figure out what happened. I can't shed tears over this, even though I care about this. I've got to do my job. And so she's very focused. She's very dedicated.
As far as the setting goes, Albany, did you want to have her in the place where she grew up?
I did. I thought that was important, that she grew up in this place where her father was a newspaper editor, where she had gone to her best friend is someone she grew up with. So I don't have that experience myself. You know, I grew up in Virginia. I've lived in Albany longer than I ever lived in my hometown in Virginia. And so, you know, I've noticed that those people that I know who grew up in a place, who have lived in Albany for a very long time, have those connections that I don't have. And I wanted her to think of this as my city, my people.
Does that, do you think, make it easier or more difficult in being a police officer?
I think she has the sense of the city and what it's about, but at the same time, she knows that as a police officer, there are things that she would like to do and that she's not able to accomplish. So, for example, in the first book, The Red Queen Dies, there's an old woman who's a witness, and she's talking to her, and you know, something happens later in the book, and she carries that burden of not having been able to do enough there.
So in this book, there is a man by the name of Kevin Novak, who is a part of this mega church, and he is found dead in the basement of a funeral home where he happens to work. What brings her into the case?
Well, of course, you
know, she's a homicide.
With a police procedure, yes, it's much easier than writing an amateur detective. She comes into the case at a moment when the city is recovering from this blizzard, and she has been on duty for a long weekend, you know, at the police station. And so she's coming in kind of tired and trying to get her balance back after, you know, this experience that the whole city's gone through. And she's coming into the case as someone who, oddly enough, and I didn't realize this was going to happen, she has great respect for, even though she's not deeply religious, she has respect for the church as an institution. And so one of the issues for her as she goes about this investigation is treating this case as she would any other, because she's dealing with this minister and this psychiatrist who works for the church and these church members. So she wants to do her job, but she's aware of the fact that this is an institution that she feels some respect for, simply because growing up as a child, she saw that churches in poor communities could have impact. And this church, of course, is not in a poor community, but she has this respect until told otherwise, until she learns otherwise for the people, the minister and the other people in this.
You said a moment ago that in your Albany, which is different from the Albany that you live in, but there certainly are parallels.
I use Albany's real life history. So I try to stick as closely as I can to the actual history of Albany.
We have these types of churches.
Mm-hmm.
And so this crime could certainly take place in the city of Albany that you write about. What is it about the place that makes it a good petri dish, if you will, for this type of investigation of crime in the future?
Albany's a fascinating city. Alice Green and I, a few years ago, wrote a book about Albany during Prohibition. I've looked at homicide in Albany. I've been thinking a lot about Albany. But Albany's a very old city. Albany has fascinating architecture. The demographics of Albany is really interesting. The communities are interesting. But at the same time, you have people from the outside coming into Albany. And in my Albany in 2019, 2020, we get immigration going on. I've added that convention center that we don't have yet, which, of course, is bringing in more tourists. Albany is not too far from New York City, which is really interesting because in the first book, they have to go down to New York. But Albany has all those possibilities for people who are drawn to Albany, like my billionaire, for one reason or another. People come here because the capital, they're doing business in the capital with various people. So there are all kinds of reasons why people would come to Albany in the past and in the present. And at the same time, Albany is in many ways small enough, so it's possible that when Hannah goes home and says to her father, you know, I was talking to so-and-so, do you know this person? Her father will know all about that person and that who that person knows and that person's background. It's possible that Hannah can know the communities and people in those communities. So it's a knowable city, but at the same time, it's cosmopolitan in some ways.
We talked about the issue of Hannah being obviously this woman in the police force, and you also mentioned about being a biracial woman, and how much did you want to explore the racial component?
Well, yeah, I teach a class on race and crime, so I think a lot about race in the context of crime. But I have this third-party candidate who's running for president, Howard Miller.
Right.
And he's in the background, and he is having an impact on Hannah in ways that would be unexpected, except for the fact that he has focused on some things that are happening in Albany. And there are things going on that she, of course, is not aware of yet that are having an impact on her investigations of the first case and the Red Queen Dies, and now this most recent case. But you know, the news reader talking about Howard Miller and his activities, you know, he's out there, he's running a third-party campaign, he's right-leaning, he's appealing to the worst instincts of his voters about immigration and all kinds of things, and he has followers. And so, you know, that's the context in which this Albany in 2019-2020 is going on. And of course, we also have immigration going on. In terms of her actual investigation as she goes about it, her race is not really having an impact because she is a police officer who's been on the force for a while. She knows her job. The people in the bullpen, the detectives that she's working with, are not really concerned about the fact she's biracial. They're concerned about the fact that she's the cop on the job who's doing this job. She's in this larger context, but as she goes about investigating the case itself, it's not that much of an issue, except for things that are happening around her that she's not completely aware of.
So with having the criminal justice background and with having an interest in not only the future, but the news that is taking place at the moment, the myriad of stories that we have heard regarding, that we've lived through regarding race and the criminal justice system, as a novelist and even in your profession as a professor of criminal justice, it has to have an effect on you, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the things that are happening as I'm writing, Ferguson, all of the police protests,
right.
You know, of course, if you're writing about a police officer, then you begin to think about, you know, how does that play out, even though I'm creating this fictional world? I mean, are there things that I want to say about what's going on? Are there things that I want to deal with? And in various ways that is affecting, you know, the things that are happening around me, do get played out in various ways in the book, in the series.
And I'm leading the witness in a way.
I'm happy to be led.
it brings with it some sort of decision, I would assume, that you have to make, which is as a result of what we have lived through, that the reader of today, reading about tomorrow, okay, but did we learn anything and has anything changed as a result?
It's a really interesting question because I'm not completely optimistic about the future. There are some things I'm very optimistic about, but I mean, if I were 20, 30, 50 years into the future, then I would expect more to have changed that might have changed in my near future. I think in the near future, we're still going to be dealing with the issues we're dealing with now because I'm in a kind of parallel universe, say the shape of those issues. For example, I have a female president,
right,
who has a biracial vice president. And then, you know, my president is, you know, she's Democratic, a Democrat, I should say. And she's under pressure from, you know, the Republicans and this far right candidate. And so I see that as sort of reflecting where we are now in some ways and where we're probably going to be. And so with my police department, things have changed on the surface, as in real life. I mean, the police department is really interesting because, you know, I was talking about women coming into the department. When you look at African-American female police officers, we have, for example, in 1992 in Georgia, there's a black female sheriff. And so, you know, for women in general, they've been moving up the ranks. And so in 5 or 6 years, they will have moved up. You know, Hannah could be a lieutenant. She could be a captain. You know, but I like where she is now because I want her out in feel. So I haven't said, you know, that she's going to move up the ranks quickly. I want to keep her out there investigating. But yeah, I think there are some things that are just going to be perpetual problems that we're always going to be dealing with in one way or another. I'm writing a book, a nonfiction book about dress, appearance, and criminal justice. And I've been thinking a lot about, you know, just the visuals of how we interact with people, you know, the things we see, the things we perceive, and how that affects how we interact with other people. And that isn't necessarily terribly encouraging, because as humans, there are certain things, once we get a stereotype in our minds, it's very hard to move away from that. And so I don't think in 5 or 6 years we're all going to be living happily together necessarily.
Well, the book is really interesting and very fun, and as is the first
book in the
series.
Yeah, we're making it sound terribly serious here.
But there's a lot of fun, of fun in the book, and it is What the Fly Saw. It's published by Minotaur. Frankie Bailey, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org, and you can listen again to this or find past book shows at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.